job.
Yeah, so for Anthony, this is a time for him again, you know, and you folks have Pilina already, so to kind of pick up where you folks left off, but any questions that he might have for you, Uncle Annie Kaika, in regards to what he's doing in his composition and his musicianship, and what you folks add as sort of like, to me, I consider, you know, experts, Loya, we use the term Loya, that have done it, have been there, know it. It's in your the fabric of your being, of what you do and who you are, and that you're very much a part of this community, and mahalo for being that resource to our artists. Yeah. Okay.
You know, thank you for inviting me, and you know,
thank you.
You know, we're going to go back and forth like this. I mean, you know, Anthony has put in his time, you know, and you can, I can see from day one when Anthony first started to play music, you know, very young age, and along with some of his peers, you know, the Peter DiAquino and Sterling Seaton, mm-hmm. and all of them, you know, with Uncle George. And Uncle George was a big mentor for Anthony, because he would see a lot of the young ones and, you know, start to pull them in, yeah. And so I got to meet Anthony when Uncle George used to do his workshops, you know, his Slacky workshops. And then I used to watch him just listening, you know, when the opportunity came, when the boys would just go in their own corner and play, you know, then I would listen. And, you know, you can... when you're listening to all of them play, you know, you can kind of pick out the ones that, hey, this one's a little bit, you know, a little bit different. I mean, you know, they, you listen to the style and you listen to the humility, you know what I mean? You know, it's like, okay, then the following year comes, and then next thing you know, hey, I mean, you know, sounding more cleaner, and, you know, start to adding things, you know, that maybe it's not on the paper or not what everybody else is doing. You're adding your own stuff, and then you're like, hey, you know, it's something that those kind of stuff you cannot teach them. Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's either in you or not, and if it's not in you, it's okay too.
Yes,
but the ones that have that, it's like, that's why I said they're kind of like outstand from the others, because they have this I would say like gift. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, I've seen Anthony grow, and I've seen him play. You know, I was telling him today social media plays a big role. Yeah. And I've seen Anthony on Oahu, and you know, so I told him, hey, you live on Oahu, you know, I still on Maui. He said, oh. You know, but you know, he goes to school in Hilo, so you know, all of these factors, you know, whether you go to school in Hilo, you live in Maui, you go to Honolulu, you know, it the more you play your music, the better you become, and then you also you figure things out, you know, as you go along the way. And then, but like this, we can sit here, and then Anthony can ask me questions that probably he didn't come across yet, but I doubt it, because I think he probably is, just the way his music been going, he's probably done that, and you know, and whatever else, you know, maybe he hasn't touched base with yet, you know, I can kind of like, you know, just start with Anthony. And man, it's right up the alley, man. You know, having Kaika here, because
yeah.
You know, Kaika was once upon a time. I mean, still is, you know, like Anthony, you know. And you know, I always, when he Kaika asked me, at age 9, he wanted to learn. I turned him down, and I learned a big lesson that, you know, because when he asked me, he wanted to learn. I told him, no, you're too young, you know, and. He turned around and I he bit me right in my back, because everything I showed him, you know, I tried to show him something really fast so that he can tell me, okay, Dad, I come back, it's too hard. That was my mentality. Show him something hard so he can come back and tell me that's okay. But he came back.
He came up.
And in 1 hour, he played exactly what I did. As I was like, oh man, what took him 1 hour? It took me 2 days
to
learn. You know, and I told myself, you know, the kids today is a little bit different. You know, back in our days, you know, you just, when people come, you automatically, you leave the room. It's only the adults in there. So you don't hear what they get to talk about, you know. And so, you know, for the music, it was whenever my father wanted us to play, he would call us. And it was mainly when we was having good fun on the outside playing is when he would call us in. So the generation today, everything is out there for them. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And all they gotta do is, you know, like go to a candy store and just pick which candy you like. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, whether you like play piano, you know, you can go to YouTube, you like play slacky, you go to YouTube. I mean, they get all these lessons today. Whereas before, you know, it was one on one.
Right.
Yeah, one on one. And I still think the one-on-one is the best, you know, because when you do the YouTube, you cannot ask questions. You just have to figure it out yourself too, yeah. So, anyway, I don't know if you want to say something, like that.
I have to excuse myself.
Please do,
I'm just going to give love.
Yes.
Because I have another appointment. I'm so sad because I want to just be able to
table
share.
Table
share. But it's okay if you don't mind. I'm going to be listening to your folks for now.
Okay. Thank
so
you. See.
And may I just
Okay. Yeah, sure.
I'm making the sound charging. You can even just do it right there.
I love you.
Thank you
so much.
Yeah.
Take care.
Thank
you. Yeah. I'm excited to see what's to come.
Yeah, me too.
Yes. Thank you, Seth. You're in great hands over here. Okay. I'm so jealous. Oh, I like Steve. Okay. Aloha.
Okay, Cici.
I just wanted to ask, like, were you always living in Lahaina, or were you born and raised?
I was born in Wailuku, where the Halemakua is today. Was called Halemaolo. Anyway, where across from St. Anthony's School, and then they have Halemakua. Yeah.
Oh, Halemakua.
Halemakua.
Oh.
Yeah. That used to be the hospital before. Mm-hmm. That's where I was born, in Wailuku. And then lived in Waiho.
Oh,
but I was raised in Lahaina by my grandparents. Because my father had to go to KwaZulu for a year because they had to build an airport to it. So they said, oh, you have to stay for 1 year. So we went to Lahaina and lived with my grandma and grandpa over in Kanapali, where Lahaina is today. That's where we used to live there before. And he grew up in Lahaina, which is really nice, you know, because when you live with your grandparents, their lifestyle is a little bit different. Yeah, you know, they still stick to the old ways. Whereas, you know, my dad and them, they kind of like, you know, whatever we wanted, you know, if we can, you know, we'll do that. And the grandparents like, no, we don't have money. You can't do that. If you like, you can make your own. You know, yeah. If you wanted something, you can make your own. But I mean, you know, we lived in two different worlds. We lived the old way, and then when we went back Waiahu, so Lahaina was always, whenever we go to Lahaina, it was always like coming home, yeah, because we grew up there. Lahaina.
He was lucky for that because. Was it daytime? Was Hawaiian music?
Yeah. My grandma was pure Hawaiian and my grandpa was Japanese. So from 5 o'clock in the morning, it was KCCN. 5 in the morning until 6 in the evening.
Wow.
And then soon 6 o'clock came, my grandfather would turn it to this Japanese station.
He knows like an incredible amount of Japanese songs.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, yeah, it was, you know, but we were like from 5 in the morning when we used to get up. I mean, all we heard was Hawaiian music. So that was a big influence for us. And the Japanese music, Certain ones was really nice, but after that we just kind of walked away.
Listening to different music.
Yeah. And there was no television too. So you only had to listen to the radio.
Wow.
Kind of stuff. So, yeah. We're glad that my grandma used to listen to the Hawaiian music, because then she'd tell us stories. Oh, when the great song would come on, said, "Oh, you know, that's my favorite song." You know, and so growing up, you know, we always remember. So I always put that favorite song in the back of my pocket, yeah. And once in a while, I just get to play them. In fact, I got a chance to record it on our three generations. Yeah, did that for my grandma. So
nice.
Beautiful.
Yeah. So did you learn Slacky growing up then?
You know, my father was a musician, and my grandma was a musician. She was mostly a hula dancer. Her brothers were all musicians. And growing up, like I said, my father never pushed music on us, mm-hmm. you know. But we always, every Friday and Saturday, he would play at where Maui Palms used to be, next to Maui Beach. Mm-hmm. Now they're putting something there, but Maui Palms was there, and Hukilau was just down the road. And my father would play Friday at Hukilau, Saturday at Maui Palms. Friday Hukilau, Saturday Maui Palms. So we all had an assignment. And I couldn't go on the weekends with my friends whenever they went camping or, you know, because I had to go, me and my brothers and my sisters had to dance hula whether they wanted to or not. Mm. So they had to make their own hula skirts, you know, and they come home from school on Friday, because Friday night they were dancing. And so when time to leave, my father walked out of the house with nothing in his hands. And I carried the guitar, my other brother carried the amplifier, the other ones carried the music stand. So my father walked straight out in the car, and everything had to be all set up. And we'd go down to Hukilau, take him out, set him up for him. And on the side of the stage had seven chairs was for the kids. We had to sit there for 1 hour and just listen to the music. And you know, at the time, the music was, you know, we still love the Beatles. And they were the big thing at the time, you know, Beatles, the Young Rascals, and all those guys. And we're sitting down, and we hear these three chord changes, you know. And, you know, they call it, some call it Chalangalang, and some call it Olapa style, you know. And it wasn't catchy to us, you know. So for years, we just listened to the music, and I guess the influence of the music came just sitting down and listening to my dad. Mm. But my dad never played slacky. He always played standard tuning. Mm. Mm-hmm. And then as I got into high school is when I got introduced to slacky. And it was because I cut my math class that day, my freshman year. You can scratch that out though. my freshman year, I cut my class in high school, and I hid in Baldwin High School. I hid in the courtyard and get some big, you know, banyan trees. I used to hide in the crevice of the tree, just, you know, waiting for the recess bell to ring, and then out comes a teacher from his classroom. In the back of him is his students, and he's holding his guitar, and I'm trying to go as deep as I can in the crevice of the tree so he doesn't see me. But he saw me, and he just looked at me. He passed. He went further down. The kids all sat on the ground, and then he started playing for them. And then I was like, "Hey, man, that's not the Beatles. It's not the Young Rascals. It's not the kind of music I'm used to hearing." So I come out of the tree, and I listen. It's like, wow, that's beautiful. I said, the bell rang, so the kids left, and he passed me. Then I stopped him and said, "Excuse me, what kind of music you was playing?" And he said, "Oh, it's a whole Hawaiian music called slacky."
Oh.
And I said, "You can teach me." Just like that, out of the blue. "You can teach me." And he just looked at me and said, "I'll teach you only if you have one guitar." I didn't. My father had one, but I wanted to learn. I said, "Oh, I have one at home." And he said, "Well, follow me to my class." And I sat down, and he started strumming, you know, and it was a tower patch tuning.
Oh.
He starts strumming, and he gives me the guitar, he tells me, "Okay, Now, you strum and you listen, but you don't ask me anything. So I strum the guitar, my most beautiful tuning I ever heard. And I told him, so what's my first lesson? Keep strumming, strum. What's my first lesson? Keep strumming, I strum. What's my first lesson? He walks over and he turns all the keys, all six keys, he just turned them. And he said, your first lesson now, remember what you was playing? I said, yeah, tune the guitar back. But in my head, because I strummed it several times, it was in my head. I took the keys and I turned all six and I tuned it right back how it was. And then I looked at him and I said, what's my first lesson? And he looked at me, you know, never said anything. And he told me, you go home now. You grab your guitar and you tune your guitar to this. And I left and I was like, I'm home at 2:30. My father's home at 4:30. And I cannot touch his guitar. Not allowed. So I'm the only one at home. I go in his room. It's under his bed. Pull him out. Lift it up. And it's standard. I take the guitar out and tune it down to slack. And I just strum. I strum. Till I hear my father's truck coming up the road. I tune it back to standard. Put it back under the bed again. And make a long story short, for 4 years, I snuck in my father's room. Just because I wanted to learn so bad. I would learn in school. I go home and I hear my father's truck, tune him back, slam under the bed. Then my senior year, my father tells me, hey boy, what you like for graduation? I said, I like my guitar. I can't buy you the guitar, too expensive. I buy you something, I gotta buy something for the others. And then he said, Bus, you don't know how to play. And I told him, I said, hey dad, in school I used to practice on my teacher's guitar and he taught me how to play slack key. And his eyes came like $50. He looked at me and said, you know how to play slacky? I said, yeah, Dad, I practice on my teacher's guitar in school. He tells me, go in my bedroom, under my bed, you bring my guitar to me. So I go under the bed, I bring him out to him. I say, but I got to tune that. Yeah, go ahead, tune the guitar, tune the slacky to him. First song I played for my father was Ulupalakua. And I did instrumental slacky, and that's the first time first time I saw tears in my father's eyes. You know, I was like, oh, and he kept coming closer and closer to my fingers. And I was like, I look, oh man, I think my dad will cry. And I said, hey, Kevin, focus. If you like the guitar, don't make a mistake. So I went through all Ulupalakua and then I stopped and he looked at me. He said, you know, boy, if I buy you this guitar, you have to make a promise to me that from this day, you never stop playing slacky. And I was like, oh yeah, Dad, I promise. Then he told me, when I was young, that's what I wanted to learn. But nobody wanted to teach me. By the time I was a senior, I knew all the rules, all the regulations about slacky. Because it was such a, it was kept so much a secret that the tunings was not revealed. Yeah, everybody that played, never showed it. And so I understood then when my father said he wanted to learn, nobody wanted to teach. Only if he was family and somebody in the family played, then maybe you'd be lucky. They're going to teach you, but they're going to look and see what kind of person you are first. That's what they're going to do. And then that doesn't mean as your uncle you're going to learn. You know, so for me, when I asked the teacher, that was a no-no. But you see, I told him, why did you teach me? He said, because you told me I had on guitar. Because normally kids at your age, no more guitar. But that's why I said, yeah, I teach you if you have on guitar. And what you told me, I have one. So he was stuck. He had to teach me. And, you know, I made sure every time I went back to him, you know, on my recesses for 4 years, I went to him on my recesses just to learn. And that was my beginning. And, you know, I made a promise to my father about the slack. He never did stop until Ikaika came to me. And, you know, the story was saying he was 9. And I told him, no, you're too young. And my wife said, gee, boy, you punished the boy and you didn't even show him or try to work with him. And I did. And then it backfired on me. And, you know, so I strongly believe that, you know, the kids today, they kind of know what they want because they have a lot of things are floating around, and you know, and a lot of my friends, when he started at 9, they wanted their kids to also play. So they tell me, "Hey, Kevin, you can teach my son how to play." I said, "You want he wants to learn, or you want him to learn?" He said, mm-hmm. "Oh no, he wants to." I said, "Okay, you let me talk with the boy." So sit down and I talk with the boy, and then I said, "Hey, so dad bought you a guitar, yeah, uncle, and you like the guitar?" He said, "Oh, kind of big for me." I said, "Well, dad said you like play slacky," and he put his head down. So he didn't answer me. Mm-hmm. I said, "Oh, you like playing slacky? You can just let uncle know." "Not really, uncle, but my dad liked me learn." I said, "Okay." I said, "Well, what do you like to?" "Oh, I like to play soccer." I said, "Soccer? Yeah, I love soccer. And you playing soccer, your dad?" Yeah, I'm playing soccer. I play for my, you know, soccer league." I said, "And the slacky? I'd rather play soccer." I said, okay, well." So I go see the dad. I said, "Hey, you know, Rich, I talked to the boy, you know. I heard you play soccer." He said, "Oh, yeah, he's a good soccer player, yeah." I said, "I don't know if the slacky going to work for him." He said, "Why?" I said, "Because I think his interest is in soccer." "Yeah, but I like him learn." I said, "You like him learn, or, I mean, he like learn, or you like him learn?" He said, "Well, I like him learn." I said, "Then you know what? I think you should just, if you like play soccer, let him play soccer, because if I'm going to teach him, you know, everything I'm going to teach him, the energy that I give to him, not going to come back to me. And the way it's going to come back to me is when I see him play. Like the teacher that gave me the energy went back to him, yeah? Mm. Yeah, so it goes in a circle. Mm. But it's not going to come back to me. I'm going to lose the energy." Mm. And so I said, so he said, "Oh, what about me?" "What about me?" I said, "Oh, what about you?" He said, "Oh, I like learning." I said, "Oh, okay, then I teach you then." So, I mean, maybe not the child, but I said, "Oh yeah, you like learn." So I worked with the dad, and he, Uncle Richard became a good slicker player. Yeah, became a good slacky guitar player. So I believe the kids, you gotta listen to them, whether they're young, mm-hmm. whatever age. So I know a lot of people used to tell me, Mr. Camarillo, used to tell me, "Hey, how do you get a Geica to play? Because I'm trying to get my sons to play." And I said, "I tell you what, Rama. You know your ukulele? Leave your ukulele in the parlor. Put them on stand." "Oh, but I only get the good kind of ukuleles." I said, "Maybe they're not going to grab them. But just leave them outside. Just leave them there." And then he came around and he told me, "Hey, Kevin, my boy picking up the ukulele." I said, "Good. You picking him up or you making him pick up?" He said, No. "You're picking up the ukulele." And from there, it was, I mean, you look at the two sons now, they're heavy into the music, they write their own music. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Ramo would tell me, he said, "Hey," when he always see me, he'd tell me, "Hey, thank you, Kevin." He said, "It worked, having the guitar out on the stand, it worked." And if it's not what they wanted to do, they wouldn't touch the ukulele. They would do something else. So.
Wow.
I heard the guy strum my 12th string. Mm-hmm. When I came home, I was so tired. Every time when I get home from the gig, I still play, and I was so tired, I left them on the couch. Then I was sleeping, and the next morning, I hear my 12th string, jang, 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 jang. It's like, I jump, come outside, I was like, Kaika, give me the guitar. Don't touch the guitar, boy, touch the guitar. I put him in the case, and I mean, that was a sign, the first sign, yeah. That he grabbed the guitar, and I don't know, you grabbed the guitar because it was just there.
It was just there. It's, the whole thing is, if it's in a case in a closet, nobody's gonna pull it out.
That's right.
Even you, you're more likely to grab them if it's out than to pull them out of the closet, take them out of the case, because then you think already. I mean, it's not strenuous, right? It's easy to do that, but even the simplest thing sometimes. You just don't want to do it.
Yeah.
And then, when you're done, you got to put them back in the case, put them back in the closet. Why not leave them out? It's easier to grab. easy to do this and that when you're done. That's it. Yeah, there's some risk in leaving it out. But I think it's a calculated risk. I think it's worth it.
Yeah.
So for you, Anthony, I never really even asked, what kind of influence you had, or was it? Yeah.
Yeah. I started about, before growing up, my mom taught me piano. I was homeschooled growing up, so she kind of kind of same thing, like maybe metaphorically leaving the uke out, but she would just kind of see what I was interested in and what directions I was kind of going, and then kind of wanted to help me along in that direction. And I had one of those old keyboards like those baby keyboards. So it's just kind of like banging on the keys and all this. And so she kind of saw that and started teaching me Suzuki method piano, which really helped me just kind of get an early somewhat of an understanding of music. But then kind of like around, that was probably when I was like 8, and then it's maybe a year about of that, and then I kind of fell out of interest of it, just kind of got tired of it, whatever. And then around 10 years old, I kind of stumbled into this ukulele group that a friend of my dad's kind of suggested check it out. So I was like, yeah, let's go and see what it's all about. Just everybody playing Hawaiian music, a bunch of, Maui songs. Ulupalakua was the first song that I learned. So I really resonated with that.
That must be on basic, yeah.
Yeah. Was like, yeah, there's like all different, songs, everybody just jamming. And then that was the one that I decided, I want to try and like get my timing right, get the chords. I remember I think I switched it to C or no, something. But I remember it took me a while to play B flat. That was the one, it was super hard.
B flat was yeah.
Took it, yeah. But yeah, so it's just been really gradual since then. Kumu Jared, Ke Aloha de los Santos was my kumu there. And he had that group all the way up until COVID, and he's looking to do it again soon. But that was just my gradual process. Learning was the peak of it, was there with him. And just hearing the songs and maybe every week trying to get one more chord in, the chords I don't know, I just like not play. Like, okay, there's an F. Okay, play the F. Play the C. And then the more I played, the more I, tried to sing. I started wanting to write, and I started writing, trying to write just haku vale, just whatever I can come up with and stuff. Probably around when I was 16, I realized I want to do this forever, kind of, and just keep growing and keep playing music.
So when did the guitar come in?
That came in. So I went to the Hula Grill ukulele contest. I don't know how I heard out about that, but I think I was around 15 or so, and I think the second year I entered in that, Uncle George talked to me, and just, they said, hey, you want to learn slack key? You should come up to my farm sometime and learn slack key. I was like, oh, yeah.
Come to the farm, then.
Yeah.
Why didn't you put you to work first?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, piano. Yeah. And, so that was incredible. Just came up, and taught me very first just the 5/4 strings, just the bass rhythm, before anything. I think that was all he taught me the first day. It was just the 5/4. Five and six, just the alternating bass.
Right, right.
Then kind of went like weekly, would go every Tuesday for quite a few years, yeah. And just go up and jam and pull weeds, and it's the one.
This is part of learning too. Right?
Yeah,
nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, it really helped me too to learn, some of his, farming methods and stuff. I want to go back up and learn more. But
Uncle George is good. He's a good mentor for the kids, because he worked in the schools, Haina Luna School as a teacher. So, he does good with the kids.
Yeah. So about since I was like 15, been learning slack key.
See, a lot of the younger ones, they can play, but they get a hard time to sing and play at the same time. I noticed some of them, and they say, but how can you sing and play at the same time? I said, well, I said, you know the ukulele? I said, you pick a simple song, you know, and the simplest song is the Happy Birthday song because everybody sings that. Or You Are My Sunshine, I said. And you muff the ukulele, just don't play any chords. Put your fingers across, hold the strings, so when you strum, yeah, it's going to sound tick, 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 and not chinky, chinky, chink, tick, 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 tick.
Uh-huh.
You strum that, and then you sing. I said, sing the kind, sing You Are My Sunshine. Just like you're not playing the ukulele. Mm-hmm. When you're singing You Are My Sunshine, your fingers strum. Just strum up and down, get the rhythm. Of when you're singing, you can hear the rhythm. You just do that. You are my. You're going to hear that. After that, when you get used to, then you release your hand. Of course, it's going to sound bad because you're not holding the keys. But you strum the ukulele after that. Then you look at the chords and you put it on. So, all baby steps and stuff. You know, for those that get. And I'd be surprised when they. I mean, you know, when I do the workshops, say, yeah, but I have a hard time singing and playing at the same time. But it's like. Not only the young ones, but the adults too, you know. Oh, yeah. And so, I mean, that's, I mean, like, everybody has their own way of teaching, but I think for me, that is, you know, holding the instrument, whatever instrument they play, and just muff the whole thing and just sing.
I think that's something.
Yeah.
I haven't.
Well,
I
picked it up as
that
I.
That's a good method, yeah. I knew that.
I picked it up as I did workshops along the way because every time I do the workshop, people ask, yeah, you know, and I have to be the one like to figure things out for them.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm trying to think, how can I help them out this time? They cannot play and sing. Oh, maybe if they just muff the instrument, you know, work. And so, I mean, you know, for me, trial and error, if they didn't work, then I would have to go back to the board, go to plan A again, you know, but just so happened across my fingers and it works. Mm. Whether the ukulele or the guitar, but those that cannot sing and play at the same time, that's
yeah.
Wow. So were you a teacher of music for a long time? in school, so yeah. How does that go?
You know, I was never a teacher, and you know my first teaching. You know, because, like I said, Mr. Meyer, Henry Meyer was the one that the teacher that took the time to teach me. He taught me, sit down, listen, watch, but you know, ask me not one question. And I didn't know that was old school. I just thought he was mean. But I found out everybody did that, the old timers. Yeah. And so, you know, when I started developing, and Uncle George asked me to do his workshop. And then I told Uncle George, hey, that was at the Ritz-Carlton, his first workshop.
Oh, long time.
I said, hey, you know what, George, I don't do tablatures. No, you just teach the way you teach. I said, oh, okay, I can do that. And then one of my friends that used to play with me on the Saturdays, we'd always hang out. He was one of the students at George, so he told me, hey, I see your name on top of the list. You're going to be one of the teachers. I said, yeah. It's my first workshop. And he told me, you like to be popular at the workshop. I go, huh? You want to be popular with the students? I go, that would sound good. He said, do tablatures. I go, oh, no, I cannot do tabs. He said, no, do tablatures. You're going to be, everybody going to like you. So I said, no, but I don't do tabs. He said, hey, it's easy. You know, the circle, you you draw six lines, and wherever your fingers stay, you just draw a circle on top. And I was like, what? Then just put your finger, hold the G chord, and then you look at the string, and then you circle them. I said, hey, man, I think I can do that. Just go home and lick my fingers. So I said, yeah, I'm going home and do that. I'm going to do the tablet. So I went home. And I was teaching Kamanu. I had him in the Wahini tuning.
Uh-huh.
So I dropped the G string. So I'm like, I watch my finger. Okay, I put the circle. I said, hey, okay, Dad. I make the circle. I said, hey, this is easy. So I did the whole song, Kamanu. I called my friend, hey, I go come over your house. To read the tab that I just did. So I went over to his house. I give him the tab. So I'm sitting on his couch, and he puts a paper down, he grabs his guitar. I'm looking at him, he's like, he's not playing. I'm kind of looking, kind of like, he look at me, he look at the tab, then he goes, he puts it on, and he tell me, hey, Kevin, play this song for me. So I go over there, I said, oh yeah, give me the guitar. And I don't look at it, I just playing on me, and he watching my fingers, he go, hey, you look at that, he go, look at my finger, look at the tab, he go, hey, something wrong here, Kevin. I said, what do you mean? He tell me, yeah, you get the dot on the wrong strings. I go, no, I get them on the right strings. He tell me, no, supposed to be over here on one. I said, yeah, well, one is the top, right? He go, no, that's six. I go, no, that's one. One, two, three, four, five, six. Six is at the bottom. He go, no, that's one. I go, who said that? He said, that's music theory. I go, I'm sorry. I grew up with six on the top. And he said, you know, like my father, he said, oh, give me the first string. Boom, 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 boom. You hit that. So
yeah, yeah.
I said, no, it's one is the top. He told me, I understand. But music theory, you're going to go with this into that shop. They're going, you did everything backwards. I go, what? I said, you know what? I took the paper and smashed the paper. I threw him in his rubbish can. I said, and that is why I'm not going to do tabs. I said, I'm going to stick to what I know.
Yeah.
I said, you know, if I never bring this paper to you, you know what I would look like at my first workshop? They would be confused, and I wouldn't know how to correct that, because I would be startled, like, what? I'm backwards. What do you mean? And so I told him, I said, I'm not going to do tabs anymore. So when Keola Beamer called me, I told him the same thing too. Hey, Keola, I don't do tabs. He said, hey, Kevin, no worry. You teach the way you teach. He said, because I do tabs, because when the people go back to the mainland, they're going to forget. So the tabs going to help them to remember. Then he told me, but there's a good and a bad to that, he told me. I said, well, what's the bad? He said, the same students come back the following year. I have a new song for them. And I tell them before the class start, okay, hey, everybody, let's play what you learned last year. And then they all looked at me and said, oh, Kumu, we didn't bring the sheets. What do you mean? Oh, we forgot the tabs. We didn't bring it with us. Can't you play it without the tab? No, we can't do it without the tab. So he would tell me, Kevin, you teach the way you teach, no matter what. He said, no changes. And I never did. So when I go, it's you watch me and you listen. And I kind of do the old way. But sometimes when I look at Jeff Dam, you know, I go to his class, I look, I said, wow, I said, it's really so much easier. So easier, you know, with the tab. It's like, man, I'm over there, I'm sweating. Sometimes I got to wipe my brow. And, you know, and he just writes it out and boom, they get them like that. But some of the students tell me that, you know, when I watch and I listen, yeah, it's the technique is different. The feel is different, yeah. So I just keep that same way. I don't change.
I always had a hard time learning with tabs. I don't know. I'm really slow, like trying to read. I don't know. I'm better at like hearing it, I think, than looking at it just personally. But yeah, I like that it's like really like that you have it and you can work at it, and you know, I just never, I guess, had the patience to really like find it like that. But
When you play,
pros and cons to that, though.
Yeah,
a lot of pros and cons to both methods, really.
Yeah, yeah.
Some of the people that only read tab, they're envious of the people that get the ear. And then the people that only get the ear and cannot read music or tab, they're envious of that guy who they can read, right?
Right.
There's been many situations where there's people that are technically sound, they can read music, and they're jealous because they can hear a song, but they cannot play them until they have the sheet in front of them. Well, we can hear a song and probably just play the song back to them, just from hearing. They're envious of us, but a lot of times they have the gig. It's like people that read music, they'll get a gig over people who don't read music. Like in the mainland, that's the situation I'm going through. I've been going through. It's because I cannot read music. I can't even get an audition on the strip. It's like, well, I can play the music. And like, But if we change the music on the spot, how are you gonna play it? Like, just hear them.
Figure it out.
You can just play it from the beginning. I'll jump in before the end. They're like, that's not how it works on the strip. So there's a lot of pros and cons to both. That's all.
But when you play by ear, the good thing about that is you can create as you play along. The tab, you're going to just follow the tab, and you cannot create because it's not there.
Right.
But when you're playing, all of a sudden, hey, you hear something in your head, and then you go in a different direction, and that helps you to be more creative when you play. And it's never going to be the same. You can play the song 10 times, and chances are you're going to play them 10 different ways. Whereas the tabs, you can play them 10 times, and you're going to play them the same. So that's the only difference. You grow a little bit more when you play by the ear, because you can add things in there that it's not on the paper.
That's great.
But I'm happy for you, Anthony. You came a long way, and you know, some people they come, you know, they come a long ways, and then they kind of give up, you know, because maybe either they're not having the gigs that they want, or you know, sometimes you gotta just stick in there, and you know, like they say, the musicians, when you want to become a musician, you have to make sure you stock up a lot of food in your cupboard, because chances are when you start off, you're gonna be playing for free a lot of times, so that people they're gonna know who you are, you know. And, you know, then they start inviting you to the parties, and then maybe as the years go by, you know, like Uncle Dennis, you know, he said when he was a great composer, Uncle Dennis, and so when he on their first anniversary with him and Auntie Robin, you know, he said, as a struggling musician, you really never have money, you know, just enough to put on the table. But he said, our first anniversary, he said, I didn't really have that much money to buy her something for our first anniversary. So what did Uncle Dennis do? He wrote the song Ko Aloha Mau O Mau. And he wrote that song for Auntie Robin for the anniversary present. And I mean, he was gifted, Dennis. I mean, he wrote a lot of songs, but he wrote Poor Honey, that was for his Auntie Robin. That was a proposal to her when he wanted to marry her. That was a proposal song that he wrote for her. And then 1 year later, Ko Aloha Mau O Mau, he wrote for their first anniversary. So, I mean, right, the songs was even better than whatever gifts you could have gotten, you know. And so everybody has a different way, you know, their approach. And, you know, for my brother and I, you know, it's my wife and I was just figuring out how long I've been playing. And 2023 made 50 years. And, you know, we're still giving back. I mean, you never stop giving back. You know, and the money is good because it helps, you know, to do your mortgage and whatever you need, you know. But, you know, if you start from the bottom and then you understand coming up, you know, it's all about giving back to your community. And because there's certain things that you can do that they cannot do. And then you give it back to them. And then, you know, it comes back tenfold. Just when you least expect it, you know. Hey, what is this for? It's all, you know, but, you know, it comes back without even you trying to think about, oh, man, I wonder when that blessing going to be coming back, because you're going to be waiting and waiting. It ain't going to come back. But when you do it wholeheartedly, you know, it comes back tenfold. And so my brother and I, we've been giving, and my wife tells me, and you're still giving that. And I mean, you know, that's the beauty about the music. And you know, at my age right now, you know, it's really not about the money part anymore. It's about just passing it on and passing it down, and you know, helping whichever way we can, Because the other guys that when we started, you know, like you had Danny Kapoi trio, you had the Gil Hanaiki trio, you had Jesse Nakaoka, these were, you know, mm-hmm. Sandy Bell, these were the guys, man, that opened the way for us, you know. And their method of teaching was not like how we teach now. Mm-hmm. It's just, oh, you just watch my fingers.
Did I hang on?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You better just hang on because we're not stopping.
Yeah.
Watch my fingers and you listen. That's how they were doing. You know,
music
you kind
is
of
relevant
watch.
Today still, yeah. People are doing Kahono Lake Trio music, Danica
Kahono
music. So it's kind of like, it's like reviving something that the older stuff, yeah.
Yeah.
It's relevant. It's very, to me, I think it's still relevant today.
Yeah.
It's popular even.
Yeah. One of my favorite songs is Pua Lili Lehua by Kahoana Lake Trio.
Action.
Yeah.
So the guys that even dad then was looking up to, and we are still kind of sort of carrying on, yeah?
Wow.
Carrying on.
Yeah. How does like your surroundings growing up, like, were you inspired most by like the Aina or people or things or what most inspired you?
Well, you know, when we lived with my grandma and grandpa, yeah, it was more old ways, yeah. They taught you the old ways. No waste anything. Whatever's on the table, whether you like it or not, you're going to eat that on the table, you know. And there's no question, oh, what's for dinner tonight? No. It's what's on the table you eat, yeah. And, you know, it's you don't waste anything.
Mm.
And your clothes that you put on for the school better not come back with a grass stain. Because, you know, you got to go school clean clothes, come back home clean clothes, and, you know. So they taught us good values about, you know, taking care of our things and not, you know, just taking it for granted and how to, they would always, my grandma would always tell us, you know, when you go into the mountains, you don't just go into the mountains. You know, if you're going someplace that you're not sure of, then you have to say, you know, but I'm young. I'm like, well, who am I talking to, Mama? And she said, you just say in the air that I'm just coming over here.
Mm-hmm.
Tell your name. I'm coming over here. I'm not going to kolohe or touch anything. I'm just coming here to look. I said, but who am I telling that to? She said, never you mind. He said, when you go someplace strange and you're not sure of their place, you ask first, you know. And not until I got older did I understand, you know, oh, that's what she meant, you know.
Mm.
And that's showing how you respect that place, you know. I grew up in Waiheke, so I know all the valleys and all the roads. But now you go to Hana, someplace different, Kaupo, you don't know the place. You cannot just go into that, you know. You got to just say, you know, this is my name and I come in here, I just couldn't look. And not going to touch or touch anything yet. Then she said, then you enter.
Mm.
And then when you leave the same way you came back. You know, you may pick up one leaf or a rock, nothing. You go in and you go out. And those things, you know, the water pipe, it's just dripping, drip like that. Drip. And I'm playing with my cousin. She would call me, hey, Kevin. I stop, I run away. I said, the water pipe leaking. So I'm looking at the water pipe. It's like every 5 seconds it's dripping. I say, Mama, it's not leaking. Watch, it's leaking. So I watch. Oh, but it's only dripping. Turn the water pipe off. So I go over there, turn them off. And so come the evening time, I would tell her, hey, Mama, how come you stopped me from playing? You know, I was having so much fun with my cousin. She said, you know, the water pipe that was leaking, if you left that water pipe leaking for 1 week, you know how much water you would waste. And I'm looking at that, yeah.
Yeah.
I said, yeah, but Mom is only leaking. Then she told me, you know, water is life.
Mm-hmm.
I never understood what that means. Water is life. Without life, you die.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking, no, but we get food. But I missed the whole thing like that. And as I grew up today, understand what grandma said.
Water.
Water is life, she said. So those things, you know, I pick up and I understand it. And other things too, you know, when you used to go up in the mountains, you say you're going to, there's a big pool, you know, those ponds. He said, you don't just jump inside. He said, grab a tea leaf and you throw the tea leaf inside.
Mm-hmm.
If the tea leaf float, you jump inside. If the tea leaf spins around like that, you don't go inside.
Yeah.
You don't go in the water. You stay out of the water.
Yeah.
You say, why is that? Says, the more wahini is underneath, whoo, what?
Mm.
You know. So, you know, those, you respect those things though, yeah? You just respect. Even though you don't understand, you just respect, yeah? So we learned that from my grandparents, and then, you know, we come back to my dad, you know, we all ate McDonald's and stuff like that, and go with my grandma, is this fish and poi, and whatever you get on the table, you eat, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So we lived in two different worlds, and I like the old world.
Oh,
yeah.
Me too.
That's a lot of pops to know people all over the island too, though, so we get all the old school people from Wai'ehu, Wai'he'e, and then get old school people from Kanapali, Lahaina, Kapalua, Napili, that he know because he was on like opposite ends of the island, so I think he was lucky to be able to see. I only get Wai'ehu, that's all I get. So he was like Lahaina, Wai'ehu, and then he went to Lahaina Luna too, one of the most famous alma mater songs in the state. I mean, I don't know, because I never been, but he's able to play them wherever gigs. Because you notice any gigs you go, you play Lahaina Luna, alma mater, who? The Lahaina Luna people. They are proud.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
But I remember when Ikaika was young, I used to wake him up and catch the bus to school. Ikaika, you got to get up, you got to get the bus, catch the school. I looked out his window. Oh, Kaika, look at the mountains. Beautiful, the mountains. So he looks up, he goes, he looks at me. What's beautiful about the mountains there? I said, look, it's just clear, the mountains clear. Look how green. Fast forward, he lives in Vegas. We talk story. Hey, Dad, remember you used to tell me the mountains was beautiful, is it? And like, I'm trying to think, oh, yeah. Oh, Dad, I wish I went take a look at the mountains then. He said, because over here in Vegas, the mountains are brown. I said, really? I never noticed the mountain. The mountains are brown.
Desert,
So sometimes you take for granted what you have in front of you. Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember that.
Small little island.
Yeah.
There's a lot to offer.
Then when he used to go to school, we always knew he was going to school because he plays ukulele going up the roadway. Then wife and I look out the window. Hey, you get the ukulele, but he don't want his school bag. Kaika, where's your school bag? Oh. Turn around, come back. The school bag on. Go back to the ukulele.
Wow.
So every time you go. And I remember when he went to school, man, the ukuleles was banned in school. They couldn't bring the ukuleles.
My ukulele class, I ended up getting an F in ukulele in Yale school. But we never actually brought the ukes out in class. We just listened to musicals and...
Ouch.
So I had to write down all the songs that was in the musical. Like
Mozart and Bach and...
Where's the ukulele? And you're like, sometimes the kids break the ukuleles. We're like, you have to grade anybody on ukulele if you haven't played one.
Yeah.
I ended up failing ukulele.
And my wife, she kept the report cards to get them to today.
Yeah, I still get
the
report. My mom still get the report. F in ukulele.
So my wife was like, I think something's wrong here. So she went to the school and talked to the principal. She said, how can the ukulele be a contraband? It's part of our life. What you mean a contraband? She's not bringing it. Cause the teacher in. Are you not teaching the ukulele? Well, you want it to break, and she said, no, but you're not using the ukulele? No, and the teacher was like, what? And we changed right there, boom. Ukulele was allowed again, So sometimes, we got to be aware and listen, because we wouldn't have known.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's just somebody that makes a noise that,
walking around with ukulele every day, and then you see an F for ukulele, like, how are you explaining this? I'm like, why would I play ukulele?
Yeah.
How can you not be playing ukulele in the class? I know, right?
Yeah, okay.
So my mom was like, I think I need some questions answered.
Yeah. That's all. She's me.
I mean, nothing against the teacher. I guess she's looking out for the budget. Nothing against the teacher, but yeah. A few years after, I think a few years after I don't even know if I graduated. I don't think I graduated yet. The vice principal of the school calls my mom. Says, hey, I gotta tell you something. Remember the teacher, Phil Keitel? Yeah. You never guess what song that she's teaching the class right now. My mom was like, I have no idea. She's like, Color Man. She's like, oh, class Color Man.
And that's a song he wrote when he was in the seventh grade.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Wow.
I was in that school when I wrote that song for a class project.
Wow.
And the vice principal who called my mom, she was the teacher that assigned that to me.
Mm.
So she's like, hey, I feel like I gotta call you, I gotta tell you this.
That's so awesome, bro.
So you just never know, you know, when it goes around, the circle goes around. You know, they say, you know, the circle goes around. Yeah, I believe that, man. In just time, a matter of time, you know. And for you, Anthony, you know, the circle is, you know, it never closed yet, and it's still going around yet.
Yeah.
It's a big circle at the end.
Yeah,
and the direction you're going to is it's a good direction, and you know, it's only what we see, you know, and you know, but I'm sure, you know, outside of what we see in the social media, you know, may have, you know, other things that you may have to deal with, and you know, so if there's anything, any questions or any.
It's a different time now.
Yeah.
Mainly just trying to like not overwork, but then not underwork and get lazy. Like before COVID and everything, I was doing like 6 gigs a week, and I really loved that experience and everything. But it got to the point where I actually got tired of playing, and at certain resort gigs, just starting like
it can happen, bro.
You know, when the audience isn't there and all that and all that. But then COVID hit, all of a sudden everything paused. And that was just like really life changing, you know.
You were able to gain perspective then.
Yeah.
When it got taken away.
Yeah, and then coming back, realize every gig, everything that I do now is I always just give thanks, and I truly enjoy every time I get to play, because.
You know what? One of those, you know, the COVID thing hit. Yeah, it hit worldwide.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not just the virus, but. A lot of people had, you know, they didn't have work, so they stayed home.
Yeah.
And they actually got to spend time with their families.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And that point, I think it was part of it was a sign for us to, like, hey, you know, when they said, smell the roses, sit down, take time to smell the roses, that was a time for everybody to smell the roses and kind of like figure out their life in the direction that they're going to. So, you know, everybody, all the musicians, yeah, it hit them as, you know, so nobody played and everybody just played on social media, you know, and that wasn't a wake-up call for everybody.
A rare glass for the world
yeah.
to gain perspective.
Yeah, yeah, it
the
was the
world. At the same time, it was able to gain some
yeah.
different perspective on life.
Yeah.
It's never happened. Well, it's never happened in our lifetime, but...
Yeah.
It's so trippy how that happened, yeah. I mean, it's like you said, you probably never pick up the uke or guitar unless you were getting paid back then, yeah.
Right.
And then it hit, and now we're not gigging anymore, and then you're like, ooh, well, maybe it wasn't so bad, you know?
Yeah.
I mean,
makes you think more creatively too, when you have more time,
yeah.
like that.
Yeah. It's good. Well, I think it's nice that you were able to kind of see and recognize that, because some people don't. Recognize it, they just don't see it.
Uh-huh.
But it's good that you were able to kind of step outside of yourself and just take a look kind of at yourself,
to
gain that perspective. It's good, man. It shows a lot of maturity too.
I'm all about.
It's good.
What did you say like would be like the the hardest thing about music? Is there anything that you like have a hard time with, whether it be a certain style of like certain gigs or certain things, like things that you had to work through to really like get where you are, kind of?
Well, I always say the hardest thing about music is the setting up and breaking down.
Yeah.
The music part,
yeah,
it's not work.
Cool, yeah.
I feel guilty when they pay you at the end of the night. You say, "Okay, here's your check, Mr. Brown," and you're like, "Man, I feel guilty because
had fun for the last
yeah.
hours.
I mean, yeah, I mean, 3 hours and you're having fun and they're getting paid for doing that." And then you look and you said, you look at your equipment. It's like, okay, now I gotta work. You gotta break down my speakers and roll out the wires, you know. So, I really, you know, in all the years, I think only one time did I ever, only one time it brought me down. I mean, it's not like I was on cloud nine, but it really showed me humility when my our bass player and I, we do a lot of, we give a lot of time. And so the Haile Mailei Papua Warner football team was making a fundraiser. And so they asked, "Hey, can you folks come and play for our fundraiser?" "Yeah, sure." But we had two gigs, one on Maui and one on Oahu. So my brother left to go to Oahu, make sure that they had everything we needed. So he said, "Hey, Kevin, you're in Ata, cover the Papua Warner gig." So, okay. So we go to the Haile Mailei gym. And then we walk into the gym, we look around, hey, there's no PA system. But there's a tripod, and there's a big, you know, like a bullhorn. But it's a bullhorn mounted on one tripod, about this big, the bullhorn. And then it's the wires come down and connected with a small amplifier. And so we're like, yeah, must be that's for the music. So they come out of the kitchen, "Oh, thank you for coming." He said, "Is the PA system coming?" "Oh, it's here already." So they point and it shows up. I said, "Oh, what's the PA system?" "Oh, yeah." I said, "Oh, what about the microphones?" "Oh, hey, what about the microphones?" "Oh, it's coming." You know, whatever. He's bringing them on the station wagon. Oh, okay. So the guy comes, he's supposed to bring the microphone. He gets the microphone, but no more stand. They bring the microphone in and we're like, so I tell the guy, "You get that microphone stand?" "Microphone stand? No, nobody thinks about the microphone stand." So we're looking at the time, like we were going to do our 1 hour and catch the flight. So you're like, it's like, oh. So he grabs the microphone, he plugs it into the amplifier. And then we're like, "I don't get two of us. There's no mic stand." So the guy comes from the kitchen. "Don't worry, I get him. Who's the lead singer?" He said, he do the lead singer. And then, you know, my brother and I more backup. "No worry, I get him. You guys ready to play? Just let me know." Like, what?
Yo.
So like, so he said, "Yeah, okay, we're going to play now because we got to catch on flight." So we're standing here. I give him the microphone and he goes, "Who going to sing first?" "Him." So you're holding the microphone and then the bass player singing, then I go,
"Oh goodness."
That. For 1 hour.
For 1 hour.
After the gig, my friend and I looked at each other and said, "Hey, you know, that will teach us humility."
Aww.
Yeah. And it was for the kids that we did it for. But he said, "Hey, man, that is when you talk about humility."
Yeah.
And if it was somebody else, I can tell you now what they would do. He said, "You know, we cannot do them.
Yes.
No more microphone stand, and this is not a PA system. We're not going to play with that." I know, that's what others would say. But, you know, the guy said, I get an idea. Thinking, "Hey, maybe you can get a mic stand. When you guys ready?" "Hey, we ready." "Who's singing first?"
Yeah.
We're like, look at each other like, okay.
You get 1 hour. It's good.
Yeah.
It's right now.
But that was a learning experience that, you know, I don't care what people are going to say. Say, "Hey, you know, the system was junk. You know, because kind of, you know, I would look at them and I would say, you know,
that was not a jump system.
Yeah, yeah, at least
get back to that story.
Yeah.
That was not a jump system.
Yeah.
You want to hear a story of one system.
And that was
one interesting story today, you know.
That was
what year was that?
That was humility.
Yeah.
For me, that was humility.
What year was that?
It had to have been in the 80s. Yeah, but mid 80s maybe. Or first, yeah, early 80s. You know, and that was in our early career, you know, because we started in 73. You know, it's like, and we went to Honolulu to my brother. Hey, you're not going to believe. So we told him, he said, what? He said, yeah, so we go to this gig in Honolulu. So we reach over there, no more the upright bass. So my brother, hey, Uncle Harry's church ward camp out in Haula. Hey, Harry, where the upright bass? Oh, Bubu bringing the upright bass. So here comes this guy. That guy's big, man. And the car coming in, and a car like this. So he gets out, pulls out the upright bass. Said, oh, okay, get the upright bass. Oh, good. And so the bass player, he's almost 6 feet. So he grabs the upright bass, and then pulls out of the car. Then he sets it down.
And he's taller.
He's taller than the bass.
So it's like a cello.
So there's no peg underneath.
Yikes.
So the bass player go. He lift up the bass. He look. Hey, no more peg underneath. So my brother turns to my other brother. Hey, where a peg? Hey, Boo Boo, where a peg? What peg? The peg for under the bass. I don't know. Hey, wait. They go in the car. He go bring 3 2x4. He bring the 2x4s out. Throw them on the ground, put them on top of each other. Oof. Put the bass on top. He said, how's that? Okay, it'll go. So now we got to tune the bass. So, okay, give me the G.
Oh, no.
Dun. The next one. And then the
yeah.
One of the strings, the motor key. Get only three keys. So like, hey, no more keys. Turn to my brother, the bass player. No more keys. What? Look, what do you get 3 keys? Hey, tell to my brother Harry, because he don't want organizing this. Hey, Harry, no more key. Wait, what in that? Pull out all this change, take the quarter, put them back, stick the quarter inside a loop like that.
Oh!
And then,
okay.
And so he's like, so he's spinning the quarter like that, and the quarter tuning the bass.
Whoa.
And we're like, how can this happen in 2 days? I mean, I'm sorry, how can this happen? Two things happen in one day.
Oh,
two kids.
And it's like, but you know what? We went and we played for this church
awesome.
Thing at their camp out thing, you know, and it turned out perfect. The PA system was good, though. It was a good PA system. But the bass didn't, the pole is like, it's a sound pole that makes the bass vibrate more. But without that, when you're on the wood, it's just a dead sound, you know.
Yeah.
But we got through that one time, you know.
Yeah.
So when you say the hardest thing about the music part, I really think I've never really faced yet a hard thing that I can say is hard.
He's lived a very charmed music life.
Yeah. You know, and I think we're truly blessed because my brother and I and our bass player, we played music all our lives.
Mm-hmm.
We never really had a job. You know, we just played music
That's
all our
awesome.
Life, and we were able to, you know, to raise our 4 children just on playing the gigs that we did.
Awesome.
You know, and it, I mean, you know, so blessed that I'm still doing that. I mean, you know, just playing gigs on full time, you know.
Yeah.
And I feel bad because sometimes, you know, I didn't learn to be a plumber, and sometimes when you need to do the plumbing in your house, and you know, then my daughter, she's a plumber, she's an electrician, and before Kaika moved,
she
used to do that.
She can read instructions and follow this girl. My sister is like, she's a cop, but she can do any kind of stuff. She changed my water pump one day. I was at school, I came home, I said, okay, I'm gonna change my water pump. And my sister says, oh, I did it already. Like, how did you do that? She's like, oh, came with instructions. I'm like, And you read them. Girls do, apparently.
You have no words to that, too. Like.
But, you know, he's proof of what can happen if you live good. You live good.
Yeah. Kapono.
Must be living good, I can say that.
What was this whole area like, way back when you were growing up? Was it
in the Wailuku area?
Yeah, was there a few stores, and was there a little downtown Market Street action, or?
The store up here. If you go up on Vineyard, down below on Vineyard, yeah, there was it. I think that's on Kato. That was Roy Kato, them, the grandparents' store, the brown one. Because he lived. You could. Yeah, it's still standing. It's still standing there when you pass up Vineyard, on the left hand side.
Well, where, the church street.
Just before the church over here, as you're coming up, you're passing.
That's what Plaza, you mean.
Yeah, yeah. Keep going up. Keep going up.
I know where.
Yeah.
It is.
On the left hand side, one old building. That was a store that used to take care of all of that area.
Oh.
And then.
If you turn down that street right there, basically, mm-hmm. turn down that street, it's kind of shaped like an L.
Oh.
Push straight down. Gonna be on the right side. I don't know what it is.
So Vineyard, but above High Street,
mm-hmm.
on this side.
Exactly.
Oh yeah.
Yes. More like the housing area, like where there's homes.
Wow.
And then Takamiya and TK, they took care of all the Happy Valley area, and, you know, up Market Street, those two stores, and then of course you had. Crest store that's right below the gas station,
uh-huh.
the Chevron, right below used to have Crest's before, and across the street used to have a hamburger place called, there was this Japanese family that did floral work, but they also did, they made their famous hamburgers, man, that was it, and they had the, where the medical center is, that was the Wailuku Hotel.
Yeah.
So my dad used to play music before. Yeah.
The
one in Plaza. Wow. Yeah. Used to be Wailuku Hotel before. Right. Grandpa used to play over there on the weekends. And because I was in Waiahu, the only time I would come, you know, Wailuku area was when my dad, you know, we'd go to Crest's, and right below Crest, little bit further down before the traffic light was National Dollar. And then if you turn on Market Street, they had Mabuhay. Was a barbershop we used to go cut hair all the time. And no matter what you told the Filipino guy, you know, just trim, he cut him one way and short. That was short, you know. And right in the back had him pool hall, and you know, They pretty much had everything, just within the town, Wailuku town, you know.
Wow.
And I think they're just trying to bring back whatever they can, to make Wailuku town, you know, I shouldn't say come alive again, but make it, you know, where people can come again, like how they used to before.
Mm.
And
there's a lot of businesses now.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, more. Yeah.
Coming alive. I mean, I grew up in this area too. In Happy Valley, until I was 13, then we moved to Waiahu. So even I've seen the changes of it, not as much as that for sure.
Where Imura's is, I think it's the bar now, Y Bar.
Uh-huh.
Oh,
yeah.
There was a Jewish store.
Right. Just past that, my tutu man, which was my grandmother's sister, married to this Chinese man, came straight from Hong Kong.
Yes.
And he was the main cook there. And sometimes when my grandmother had to go someplace, they would bring us all the way from Lahaina and drop us with him. Tall Chinese man, about 6 feet, and he had a long, long beard. And then he was the main cook for that restaurant, you know. And we'd go in the back, and he would make us sai min. He would make the noodles too, you know. And I mean, because there was no electricity, everything was kerosene.
Yeah.
You would smell that kerosene smell. It's like, what is that? Then you go back Lahaina, you get light. Yeah. You come to Wailuku town, where they used to live, the Chinese people. everything was kerosene lantern.
Wow.
So it was like, oh, what is it smell? And then, you know, then here comes the big bowl of saimin, and it's like, oh man, saimin. And when you, oh man, that was so good. And I mean, you know, I remember that, and that was when I used to really see Wailuputan. And as I got older, then I got to go up more vineyard area.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah.
Oh, wow.
But before growing up, you know, like growing up before getting into high school, we used to walk from Waiehu all the way up to Kalamaluhia to go find bicycle parts.
Mm-hmm.
Because they used to have a junkyard over there.
Oh.
And we used to walk all the way hoping that somebody threw away one bike frame.
Oh, bro, that's a long
We used to walk all the way, and sometimes nobody threw their bikes away, so we turn around, we walk all the way back home.
Yeah.
And Saturdays, we go back up. Hey, get on bike frame. Pick up the bike frame, take them back home. Then go back up again. Hey, get on the rim. Hey, buy the rim, take the rim, bring them back. And, you know, that's, I guess maybe that kept us out of trouble, maybe. Or that's things that we, because we knew our parents couldn't buy us the bikes. So we made our own.
Yeah.
Whoever threw away stuff, we made. Yeah. And so I remember one time I finally got my bike, got them all together, got this bike with everything on top, just no, had no tires, only the frame. And so that was my bike. So I rode them all the way home from Kalamaluhia, just on the bike,
the rims.
Also on the rims.
So no rubber tire.
No rubber tire.
Just the rims.
Because I didn't want to carry the bike all the way. So my friend had a bike, so he tied on rope from his bike to my seat, and then I go ahead, and he's in the back of me, pumping the brakes, coming down. Just as we're coming down by Uncle Teddy in place, that's like, oh, that thing was coming so fast. I was like, and then Uncle Papio, he stepped the brake, and he yanked my seat right off. He yanked the whole seat, and I went down on the bike.
Oh no.
Then the thing started to turn around, and one car was coming. And I was like, I had no brakes. So I turned the bike to the, we had tall grass.
You guys had to
ditch it. I went in there, and you know, those cane grass get big stumps. Yeah. So the bike, when it hit, well, lucky thing, I found an army helmet that had all chicken crap on top. So I put on the helmet, and I was going to bring him home, wash him off. I think if I never had that helmet that day, I probably would have broken my neck, because the thing went, hit that bush, and the whole bike went flip. And I went in the air and landed on my helmet.
Oh.
And I stood right up, and then my friend looked at me, and he had the seat on the ground. But that's the things that we used to do to keep us occupied.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and, you know, now you just say, my grandson, oh, Papa, I like on bike. Oh, okay, let's go look down, you know. Let's go down to Kmart or something, you know.
Yeah.
Or Walmart. Put the bike in there. I would tell my daughter, you know, back in our days.
Frankenstein
the bike. If lucky, if we can go to the store and get on bike. And if, you know, if we went to Dairy Queen, oh, that was a treat.
Yeah.
That was a treat. My father said, hey, let's go. And you don't ask where. You just all jump in the car, and we looking like, you know, when you go in by the bridge, oh, we're going to Dairy Queen. That was a treat. That was a treat, you know.
Dairy Queen was there.
Yeah.
Now it's a restaurant there. It's the one by Hong Kong, you're talking about.
Yeah.
Dairy Queen.
Yeah.
Did you surf going up to?
Surf, yeah. I surfed all the way from third grade, all the way to, I put the ring on my wife's finger, and she used to watch me surf. When you surf for hours. And one day, man, it was a storm surf, and I went out, and she saw me going out and out and out. And when I came back in, she told me, hey, I was watching you from the car. You know, if you ran into trouble, there's no way I can go out and rescue you. I said, yeah, nothing gonna happen. I've been surfing all my life, you know. No, and then we were expecting our first one. So she rubs her stomach. She tell me, yeah, but what about this one?
Yeah.
And I'm like, so I look at the stomach and go, what about that one? She's going,
it's time to get rid of the
I think it's time for you to put the board away. I go, what? I said, Oh, I was suffering all my life. Nothing would happen. I promise, nothing would happen. What if something happened? I cannot save you. See, I cannot save you out there. So I was like, oh, and that was it. I was 21 years old when I stopped surfing. Yeah.
Yeah. Was that done like in Waiahu, like Pukekohe?
Waiahu, down the harbors. I mean, I surfed all over. All over except for Hanamanu is the only place I never went. Or in Hana, I never surfed that area, but every place else. You know, in Napili.
Napili,
they used to call it Baby Makaha before.
Oh.
Baby Makaha. I used to surf over there.
Oh.
When the waves were big, yeah.
Oh.
But, yeah, so I surfed, yeah. from third grade to 21, I think it's pretty much good, but. That was preparing me, you know, for what was coming up in the future for me. Yeah. Who would have known? Yeah, you know, it would have been an accident in a wave, and I mean, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, it was just something that was preparing me for the future. And
How does it like when you're going to like write music? What do you usually start with? What's your initial spark of inspiration?
Jeez, I tell you. Like I said, yeah, it's been 50 years, yeah, I've been doing music.
Yeah.
Not one song did I write, and I keep telling myself, how in the world can people write a song? First of all, they can put, I mean, you know, I can write words down, but you try find the melody to it, you know, it's finding the melody.
Yeah.
And so, you know, sorry to say, but I tried.
Some slacky stuff.
I, you know, come up with, yeah. That's just from inspiration kind of stuff. But I always wanted to write at least one song, and I could even do that one song. So, I mean, you kind of get songs, that he wrote, and I never even write any yet. So I'm just thinking, you know, maybe I leave the songwriting to those that's good in that, and you know, and I guess everybody has a purpose in life in what they can do that can help others. Yeah. So I think mine is just sharing the music and teaching the music, and no matter how much I try, it's like erase it.
He has a good ear for. So if I had to compare him, he'd be kind of like an interior decorator. The house is already built. Everything, the foundation is there already. But you give him a song, but the song is already written, and he can make it his own.
Yeah.
You know, he's got really nice ability to not better the song, but change the song.
And
you know, because everybody knows the original way, which is there's nothing wrong with the original way. But I think Pops likes to put his own spin on some songs, so it's kind of like it's almost like writing, except it takes out the actual writing part, which is the hard part. You write, I mean, that lyrics don't come easy, right?
Mm.
Songs typically just don't come easy to song anyway.
Mm.
I think there's some real lyricists out there, Paul McCartney. John, you guys that really write, somehow it comes to them. That's a gift.
We all
have a certain level of a gift, of the gift. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So some people are lyricists, some are interior decorators. You give them the song that's already written, and boy, they can change them into something that's, you know, different and unique. Mm-hmm. So Pops is really good at that.
I have a hard time like writing instrumental pieces. Like I want to get better at writing just classic slack key action, you know. So, but
sounds don't come easy, bro.
Yeah.
But you write your own music too, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess I find my inspiration when I hear a certain riff that I like, and I hear some words, I hear some idea, and then it kind of like falls in together.
Well, we listen to people that tell stories about songs that they've written, sometimes even really hit songs. It started from a riff.
Something
that was really Madini.
Yeah.
And they would basically put water in that and let them grow somehow. It started from something real small, like you said, like a little riff that would inspire something.
Right? Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
So, for example, the Kalo Man, that was it was not a song, it was a project. And so it, out of the project it became a song. Yeah. So Ikaika and his the cousin Kip Kiala from Ekolu.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. His mom is my older sister.
Oh.
So he would come over the house often. And then Ikaika.
Spent a lot of time together around that time.
Yeah. A lot of time.
And he was in high school almost graduating.
Huh.
Spent a lot of time together. And he wrote
a
lyricist.
Oh man.
Ah,
he wrote
yeah,
a lot.
I mean, the melody for Color Man came from a song that he wrote. And we just changed the lyrics.
Oh, yeah.
And I have asked him in the past if he's ever going to record that song. He said, no. I said, it would be nice if you would. I don't think anybody would put them together because it's so, even though it's the same chords and same melody, his lyrics are so different.
Mm.
Just wonder if anybody would put it together, but we basically took a melody from his song and we completely changed the lyrics.
Yeah.
Just to talk about...
What was anyone the song was?
I'm on Fire.
I'm on Fire, yeah.
Because I was learning about just Hawaiian history, the Ahupua, about mostly about tarot and how important it was.
Mm-hmm.
For the Hawaiians back then.
Mm-hmm.
So we took the melody from his song and we traded one line for the next, hero one line, arrow one line, hero one line, until we had the song.
Wow, that's awesome.
And
yeah.
Miss Ryder, who is also a songwriter, Leo Ryder, she helped me tweak the chorus to Malama the Land. Was her input for the song, which really actually, I think it made the song.
Mm.
I think it really just made the song. But
nice.
It's sometimes nice to collab, you know, with
yeah.
some bounce ideas off of people. I mean, some of the best songs were written by a group of people.
Yeah.
Lennon, McCartney.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
There's people you can bounce ideas off of somebody, but it's sometimes it can be difficult to find like-minded people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, somebody that have your same interests. Music-wise, and even some outside of music, sometimes it's hard to find that person. But when you do, boy, it can be real magic, especially when it comes to music. Yeah.
I love collaborating like that. Like, anytime you can put two different perspectives together and then make one, and that's cool.
I just think it helps a lot.
Yeah.
So do you like playing solo, or do you like playing as a duo or a trio? What would you prefer?
Yeah, what's your preference?
I like, if I had to pick one, I'd say solo. I like playing solo. Yeah,
nice.
I get my loop pedal and I could just kind of just let my imagination just take over and
yeah.
just do my thing. But and then, yeah, no, I don't loop so much when I play slacky because it's more full sound anyway. But like on the ukulele, I'll loop something. Sometimes I'll record something like when I want to switch, I'll record on. A loop on the guitar and then jump on the ukulele.
I see.
And then loop it up somewhere and then
have that loop, yeah.
And then yeah. So I mean just the creativity of that, kind of just trying to like, you know, craft the sound I hear in my head is what I want to do. But I love playing, you know, duo action, trio action. Yeah, and definitely just in a jam setting that you can't beat that,
yeah.
you know. So yeah.
I agree. Yeah.
I like it any kind of musical situation is there's fun and you know beauty and all of it.
The energy is fed off of everybody within the group.
Yeah.
So you like the solo thing then, yeah? I
like solo, but yeah, I like trio just for or duo. I mean, yeah, just for different reasons,
yeah.
you know.
But if you was to play a regular gig, you would just rather solo.
Prefer solo.
If it was your regular steady gig.
Yeah. But I mean, it would be cool to have. Yeah, it's like. Right now, I only have solo gigs regularly, but then sometimes, you know, places want to have trio, mainly like conventions and stuff, they want to have duos and trios and stuff.
Yeah,
so I have guys that I play with regularly and stuff. Yeah. For a while, before COVID hit, I was opening for Uncle Barry Flanagan and Uncle Eric Gilliam over at Nalu's. And that was kind of cool because I opened for them. Got to catch their set and I jumped in with them for a couple songs towards the end as like a guest kind of thing. And, you know, that kind of thing was fun. And then Uncle George for a while, we would play back to back on Sundays, but then for we kind of bleeded our sets together for about 45 minutes in between it.
Oh, nice.
And so I had that, like, Saturday was with Barry guys, and Sunday was with Uncle George, and I had all my resort gigs in the middle of the week. That, you know, that's what I got tired of. But when it came to the weekend and knowledge, I was like, oh, you know, just education, just hearing it,
yeah,
and just
experience,
being in the element,
music,
man.
Musicians, that's,
yeah,
that's what it's kind of all about, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So
sharing the stage, I mean, that's where a musician is probably most happy.
Yeah.
Sharing the stage with another musician, you know.
Yeah.
Especially good guys like that. I mean,
yeah, yeah.
That's priceless.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that style of just, you know, back and forth, old school, like, you know, you take one, I take one, whatever. It's cool. Yeah.
Memories, man. You gotta make as many memories as you can like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's what sharing music is kind of all about.
Yeah.
My dad get stories about when he used to play with, like, Willie K's dad and stuff like that. I'm
oh.
Just like, oh, man. Hey,
wow.
Geez.
So when you said, three microphones, because Willie's dad, my brother Sheldon, and I, and then you still have one bass, you know, small amplifier, and so we, you know, we figure, oh, you know, he hired one bass player too, and so we started playing, and then no bass player. Comes 2:30, we see this young boy with a big afro hair, and he walks with his school bag, comes to the street, we're like, this boy walks straight over there, drop his bag, sit down on the chair, plug the bass in, and that was Willie. And then Manu would say, oh, that's my boy Willie. So, and he would just sit down and just listen to us, and he'd be playing the bass. And that's how we knew Willie every, because
wow,
he was going commemorative at school.
Oh.
And we used to play right on Front Street, so he would walk past the banyan tree, go straight to the gig, sit down, drop his bag, plug in, and
wow,
just play the bass.
Wow.
And just follow us. And, you know, so the dad would say, you know, the boy, good musician, but he only like rock and roll. That's what he would say.
So versatile,
right? He only like rock and roll.
Yeah.
But I told the boy, hey, exactly what he told Willie is exactly what my father told us. It's okay to listen to other music, but don't forget, learn your music too.
Yeah.
Yeah, learn your music. Yeah.
A lot of traditional stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You could go outside too.
Yeah.
Yeah,
he did that too. Really, he was really.
So, you know,
good.
When you 71, you just turned 71.
Yeah.
When you 71, you can be telling the story, maybe in the setting where I used to open up for Barry Flanagan.
Yeah.
And Eric Gilliam, and I used to play music with Uncle George Kahomoku.
Yeah, yeah.
These are the memories that you get to kind of take with you. Yeah.
Yeah. Never forget all of that. Yeah.
And you never forget these things, right?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah, man, that's good. It's, you know, and those memories is yours, bro.
Mm.
You get to carry that through your life.
Yeah, and being at the workshop, you know, jamming with you and everybody in the circle, just, yeah, can
yeah,
just take me back like yesterday.
Well,
yeah.
Yeah.
Jam sessions are the best, I think.
Seriously.
Because there's, I always say there's no whole bar, yeah. When you sit
yeah,
down
yeah,
in a
yeah,
circle,
yeah,
when you go in a studio, make a mistake, they can cut and paste. Okay, you know, let's just come, just play. We'll correct a mistake.
Yeah, yeah.
When you're in a jam session, you cannot correct a mistake.
It's
right.
It
you,
happens. It's
yeah,
gone.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so you just concentrate a little bit more. Like, yeah, I'm not gonna be the one out of 10 of us. I'm not gonna be the one to make a mistake. You know. And so yeah, sitting down with everybody else, it's man, that's the best.
Yeah,
I think. Yeah, that's the best. Then you feel everybody out because you don't play with these other 9 guys, you know, and you listen to their style. Hey, wow, hey, you get a good style,
you
know.
You can pick up stuff too.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
In your
yeah,
jam
yeah,
sessions.
Yeah.
That's kind of. You can be. I mean, not only rewarding, but you can pick up stuff. Like everybody has a different approach to music. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's nice to see everybody's approach. They're, okay, take on solo.
Yeah.
So you're like, oh, I never thought of, you know, adding this or that. Like, oh,
yeah,
wow, it's kind of cool. Then you get to kind of broaden your view of, like, even just that solo for that song or something. And then it kind of opens the door to open your mind to, like, broaden your views on, like, any other song, you know?
Yeah.
It kind of teaches you that you can approach it even slightly different by watching everybody's approach to the song. The same, we're all playing the same song, but everybody's approach is slightly different. Yeah, it's kind
right.
of cool. That's what I really like about jam sessions.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, back in the 80s, right under there, in the gazebo, under the gazebo, in the 80s. I had to be the mid because I was we were still at the Wailea area, and I had to be home to go out there and catch it. About the middle here.
That long?
Man,
I remember
it was long.
The late 90s.
Yeah. About I say like the mid 80s, maybe 85, maybe 86.
Wow.
And you know Leonard Kwan?
Oh, yeah.
Leonard Kwan. Well, we used to come here because my friend, Paul Tanigawa, he was a slacky player. He moved from Honolulu.
Mm.
So we go to the same church. And so we met, and he said, hey, I'd like to sit down with you and, you know, play slacky. I said, hey, let's go find a place that we could play. So Uncle Saul Kawaihoa, he was a groundsman over here. And he used to teach slacky right here at the Bailey House.
Oh.
And so we stopped one day and said, hey, Uncle, I get on friend, you know, we just like play slacky. You think we okay? We come on the ground. So he said, hey, use the gazebo. If you can go over there anytime you like. He said, you sure? Yeah, no worry. When you guys like come, wow, you know, we got to pick one day and on time. And he said, yeah, anytime you folks like, use the gazebo. So we would come back in the 80s, my friend and I. Then when Uncle Saul used to be on his lunch break, he would bring his guitar out. There would be three of us under the gazebo. So my friend tells me, hey, I gotta pick up my friend from Honolulu. You mind if he came up? I said, no. So I'm up here by myself. Uncle Saul, we're talking story. Then he goes back, he started raking the yard.
Yeah.
And my friend come, and then here's his friend coming out of the car. So kind of elderly guy, walking very slow, holding one guitar case. I said, hey, well, the guy must play guitar. So he walks, they walk all the way to the gazebo. And then my friend tells me, oh, Kevin, this is Leonard, my friend from Honolulu. I said, oh, hey, how are you, uncle? And so my friend Paul takes the guitar out, he starts playing. Leonard sits down, and he doesn't open his guitar. Good 40 minutes, he let me take his guitar out.
Right.
40 minutes, I'm watching him. He's just massaging his hands like that. Then he finally opens the lock. It's like, ooh, hey, uncle can play. He opens the guitar. Then he takes it out. He sits down in a circle. So we go back and forth, Paul and I, back and forth. So I said, hey, uncle, play one, uncle. And he played Upihi Moi Moi.
Oh.
And I listened to him and said, oh, what is it? Wow, he's good. You know, he's really good. Hey, and he, man, just as good as Leonard Kwan. So when he got through playing, I said, hey, uncle, you're the closest I ever heard that play Upihi Moi Moi like Leonard Kwan. So my friend's still laughing on the side, smiling up. I look at him, he tell me, oh, Akira, I forget to tell you his last name. That's Leonard Kwan. I was like, what? That's Leonard Kwan. I was like, took off my guitar. I go over there, I hug him.
Oh,
uncle, I said, when I was a small boy, I used to listen to your music on the radio.
Uh-huh.
Hug him. And he just stays like that, you know. And I hug him. Said, uncle, I didn't even know that was you. Because he looked nothing like his album.
Uh-huh.
You know, his album was really young. Now he's older and, you know, hard to get any hair and heavy set. So I had no idea. He just said, Leonard. I figured just Leonard. And when he says Leonard Kwan, oh my gosh.
Uh-huh.
And in Lahaina, there's two slacky players. One is Frank Kahani, and the other one is Philibert Secretary. The only two slacky players in Lahaina. And they all passed away already. But that's my uncle, so I would call him up and tell him, hey, uncle. Because he always told me, hey, boy, when you gonna bring your son and you come to my house? Because he was a good slacky player. I like play with you and your son. Oh, yeah, uncle, okay, I call you. Never did. So I call him up, hey uncle, I get some friends, we can come over the house. Yeah boy, when you like come? I said, maybe I call you. Come today. I said, no, I go not today. I call you. So anyway, we ended up going over there. Me, Paul, Leonard, and Uncle Richard. So we're all sitting down, my uncle, in the garage with his, because he was a crane operator all his life. He lost his hearing from the heavy equipment. So in the back of him, you know, amp this big, and he's right in the front of amp, and he's right behind his head. And so we're coming up to the garage, we can hear the guitar going. It's like, when it loud. So we go inside. Oh, Uncle, hey, boy, come inside. Say, Uncle, hey, this Paul, this Leonard, this Richard, this my uncle, you know, Uncle Phil, secretarial. Hey, so he say, hey, come on, let's play. So he tell my auntie, hey, mommy, go cook the food. I go, no, cook nothing, auntie. We're not here for eat. No, the my auntie, no, shut up, you boy. But Uncle said, you guys going to stay here eat. I said, auntie, no, we never come for eat. No, I'm going to cook anyway. So we started playing and we're going on circle. So I don't tell my uncle, that's Leonard Kwan. So come Leonard turn, he plays for you, my boy. I said, I want you, my uncle. Looking at Leonard like, hey, and my uncle said playing like that. Oh, but hey, the song pow. He turned to the guy and he said, hey, you play good key wallo. Opie moi moi. Oh, just like Leonard Kwan. I tell him, uncle, I'm sorry, uncle, but that's Leonard Kwan, uncle. Look at me, go. Huh? I go, Leonard Kwan. I said, him, uncle. Hey, boy. No fool around. No, uncle. I said, Leonard, go on. He took up his guitar. Walked straight over to Leonard. Hug Leonard. He said, same thing. Oh, uncle, I used to listen to your music when I was a young boy. Hug him like that. And he just said like that, Leonard. So, he called my auntie. Hey, mommy, come outside. Bring the camera. What for? Never mind, bring the camera. So my auntie come up with her apron, wiping her hands, everything, and you can smell the pumpkin peas going. So she come outside. Daddy, what do you like? The camera. Yeah, what do you like with the camera? Mommy, you know who this man? I said, Leonard Kwan. What? She take off her apron, she goes straight to Leonard. Oh, Leonard. Oh, when I was young, I used to listen to your music. But I looked at that, and I think to myself, I wonder how many people...
Yeah,
many people got to do that with him. Yeah,
wow.
And so, when I knew he was Leonard Kwan, he would still come often, and he would never tell me I'm playing wrong. He would just, when I'm playing, he would put his hand right on the guitar like that.
Mm-hmm.
He tell me, "Hey, what you're playing is good, but just try this."
Yeah.
He would show me a different movement, and I was like, "Oh." Hey, that sound good. You tell me. You try that. So how is that again? He not show me again. He just play. He said, let's play.
Yeah.
So we play. I'm like, oh man, how did that thing go again? So I'm watching his fingers and boom, I see him with that same move he showed me. I was like, oh, okay, I know what he said now. So when I go home, you know, because he owns school, yeah, he's not gonna stop and tell you, oh, put your finger here. Okay, put your finger there. No way. You got to catch him on the first time. And so I was like, oh, okay, I know where that, you know, that D7 up here, way up here.
Yeah.
That's the one. Because I used to use a D7 down below, yeah? Which is okay, but when he did that, it was more colorful. I was like, wow, okay. And then the next time he come, he plays something else, I pick him up, I watch him, and if I never get him, I would play the song, and I would make mistakes on the song. So he would stop me. Try this.
Oh,
watch him again. Yeah. So I play again. I make a mistake. He go, that is okay, but try this. Watch his finger like that. Then.
Yeah.
And that's how he used to pick up, because wow. I know he old school. He not gonna put my finger on and tell you where to put them. You gotta watch the first time.
Wow.
But you know, I had opportunity to work with Leonard then. And then I brought him home, and
many other legends.
Yeah,
they ended up coming to this gazebo every week,
Mondays was there every Mondays, and then came Saturdays.
Once a week for 10 years,
probably at least.
And so started with just them two, and by the time things was full blown, it was the entire gazebo, and then had people line up outside, musicians, because they all. The word just spread that these guys get together every Monday, and then you guys would change them to Saturdays.
Saturdays afterwards.
And so guys was just coming, just guitar, ukuleles, guitar, had that upright bass.
Wow.
So people would just.
And there were
up.
Vice principals, principals, plumbers, electricians that played Slacky but never came out in the public.
People just showed up.
Wow. They just
and
wanted
was
to play.
People area was cool coming out.
Wow.
Beyond with a holiday.
I mean, everybody, if you came late, you would be way in the back. But we stopped because they get different people that take over here so many years, and so we were there like about 10 years or maybe a little bit more. So the new director came and said, hey, we're having a fundraiser. We're going to make it monthly thing. You think the guys will be able to come? I said, I can ask them. I said, but I cannot promise you that they're going to come, because that's not what they do.
Mm-hmm.
That's, they're doing this just for enjoyment, for themselves.
A lot of them weren't really musicians.
Yeah.
They play music.
Yeah.
It's different, when you're a musician.
But they just wanted to sit and play.
Yeah.
So I said, I cannot... was at Kahuman, they're doing something, a fundraiser, as for the Bailey House then. It's Kahuman Shopping Center, and it said, I said, I cannot promise you. I can ask who can come, but come that day, maybe nobody will show up.
Mm.
And then she made a remark, she said, well, you folks using the grounds.
Oof.
And I was like, okay. So then I told the guys, hey, we gotta find someplace else. Huh? I never tell them why. I said, we gotta find someplace else, maybe, So they said, where that gonna be? And then we all moved to Wahe. Next to Wahe School. There was a long gap in between, and everybody kept calling, hey, it's okay, we win the next jam, so win the next one.
Yeah, just going down the Wahe Church.
Then we went to the Wahe Church, years later, at least 5-6 years later, maybe more. And then we ended up at Wahe Church, because
the
minister was, he wanted to learn Slacky, so I would teach him every Saturdays. So he said, hey, anytime you like the guy, you come to the church. I was like, hey, sure, because a bunch of guys that like, he said, yeah, just come to the church every Saturday. So he would go buy one tent, put the tent up, put all the chairs there, so every Saturdays, boom, all started going to Wahe.
Mm. Yeah.
And then we did that for a long time, and then they had on, because it was old school, they had cesspool, and then they had to change, everything had to change into septic.
A sewer.
They had to change the sewer, so they had to make on sewer line. So all the tractors, all the construction.
Right where you guys was?
Right where we was.
We'll take a break for a little while, and I guess.
The Kahu said, maybe you can just wait for maybe 3 months, because liability, somebody get hurt, say, okay, no problem, and then
never picked up again. Bombay.
Even Uncle George would come.
Yeah,
Uncle George and Auntie Nancy would come and sit down, and so you enjoy everything that comes your way. You just chuck it down, man. Even though if there's disappointments on the way, you chop that down too.
Which is fine too.
Yeah.
What's wrong with that?
Then the disappointment is the ones that maybe, you asked and never showed up, and then back them down. Okay, so the next time you get something, you go back to your notes. Okay, this one I cannot rely on. Okay, maybe we'll just, so everything you just either you've jotted them down or here in your memory, And then everything is you. You focus on you, because you get the energy.
Yeah.
You get the energy. And whoever joins up with you, you know, gonna have to get the same energy as you. Yeah. Because like how you say, yeah, you know, when you play with a group, yeah, some, if when it's a duo or a trio, everyone, to make it successful, everyone got to get the same chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If one nobody chemistry, then it'll be just a short term thing.
Eventually,
yeah, it's gonna show one guy is more, you know, like, you know, like, oh, hey, look at me, you know, listen to me play. Where it's like,
mm-hmm.
when you play together, it's chemistry.
Everybody contributes something.
When only one guy play louder than the other ones, then it's a little bit, you know, so.
Yeah.
You know, you come across the kind of stuff like that, you know. And my brother would always say, for example, you go down to Kahumano, get a trio on stage, then one other parent sitting there, they're looking at, you know, get their kids playing. So one parent going up to the sound guy, hey, you know, my son playing the bass, you can make him louder.
Oh.
And then they go make him louder. Then the other parent sitting down, the bass getting louder. He stand up. Hey, my son playing the ukulele, you can make him louder. Oh, okay, make him louder. Then next year, the guitar player. Hey, you're trying to make my son. Hey, you know the guitar player, you can make him louder. So next thing you know, everything comes loud.
Max out now.
And, I mean, people don't like to be rude because all of a sudden it comes loud. Yeah. But you know the trick to that? The trick to that is drop down the volume. Yeah. Make it soft.
Yeah.
When you make it loud, people compete with you. They talk louder. Yeah. We found out in crowds, yeah. Had one gig in our whole life. We played for 800 people in this ballroom. And no matter what we did, we couldn't hear ourselves.
Mm.
No matter what we did, the people were so noisy. So you know what we did? Shut down our vocals, put the instruments up. My brother strummed the ukulele, I strummed my guitar, the bass player, all he plays is doom, 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 to the whole hour.
Oof.
And nobody even knew we wasn't even singing. Because if we sang, they talk louder.
Mm. Mm.
So the trick is that you play, the more you pump your music, the louder the people come.
Mm.
But you check out opposite, you check out softer.
Mm.
Then boom, they come down a little bit softer.
Because
when they hear the music, it's like, oh yeah? Talk louder than you.
Some people get different mentality. Musicians, they like to be heard, yeah. But if I feel like I always tell Pop, okay, if the chairs are all facing us, then I think we're okay to go, you know, to be loud.
Mm-hmm.
But honestly, if the chairs are all facing us, chances are, whatever, even if we whisper, they're going to hear us because they are looking and paying attention to us.
Right.
The chair's all facing your child. All we are is background.
Mm. Yeah.
So if you start to see somebody leaning in and doing this, what I like to do is pull down because we're not the focus.
Mm.
We're just ambient. We're just background. You know, so the last thing we like is people to be yelling at each other right across from each other on the table.
Right.
You know, we're trying to get our music to be heard, but we're not trying to be the main focus. Yeah.
Mm.
But some people, some musicians, maybe the younger ones, they just want to be heard.
Mm-hmm.
So that takes years. I got lucky because dad guys already went through that. So even in my very beginnings, it was I was lucky to get that because that's usually after years of doing gigs and stuff. I was lucky. So now when we set up, we go to the first two tables and we make them comfortable for them and we let the sound carry the rest of the way.
Mm.
Most people will go to the back of the room and be like, turn them up, soft over here, okay? But then the first two tables now are getting completely blown out. So it's nice and loud for the back,
Right.
So, and dad guys used to do them, it's the first two tables in the front, it's comfortable for them, the rest can just catch whatever's, you know, flowing past the two tables.
And then it brings them in, when it's soft in the room.
We're just trying to make them enjoyable for the listener and not trying to make them challenge.
And you see the difference, you know, when you do that. You see the responses a little bit more because now the music is comfortable,
yeah.
And then
you know, gotta clap too, by the way. At the end of the songs, they don't clap.
Yes.
It's okay.
Yeah.
Some people think it's rude.
It's, yeah.
It's like, actually, when they clap, I feel like we're a little too present, because now they know we're done. When they don't clap, it's fine, because we only background. Mm. So they don't know, they don't realize that we started or finished, which is good to me, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of what the goal is.
Mm.
When they clap, sometimes you think, oh, well, maybe we're a little bit loud. Because they know the music is done. But some musicians get frustrated when they don't clap. They think it's rude. They're like, oh, well, we're done with the song, so
Here's
my response. It's like, yeah, well, like I said, the chair's not facing you. You don't have to get a response like that. Yeah.
Right.
Just things to kind of remember as they just go on. So they don't have to clap, it's okay.
Yeah.
You're not here, they're not really here. If they're in a restaurant, they're here for the food.
Yeah.
You're here to entertain them for the most part. Yeah.
And you know, to know, people don't know who you are, but when you set up your stuff, your equipment, you know, the mic wires and everything.
Yeah.
All in one direction. You know, because you can see other ones that they're all like noodles all over
like
the
spaghetti on the stage.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
It when your line is all one way, it goes one way, one direction, all it shows the character and how much these guys are the kind. They're not
pride in what you do.
They're not rookies. You know, these guys, because look at the wires, man. They're all going one way.
Professional stages, I'm just like, I can't even look. My early days, his dad was, you know, over time.
When we gig now.
Yeah, I'm like,
hey, Dad. Oh, wait, that wire. You go over there, straighten out the wire.
He's like, yeah, I said, no. Okay, can you step away, sir? You know, once you're done. And so I know that everything is set up. Can we fix the cord? You know, it just makes a difference, you know.
Yeah.
Especially if you're getting paid for the gig. Actually, you're getting paid to do anything. You better do it well.
Yeah.
If you're getting paid to do whatever it is, just do it well.
Yeah. I remember one comment, we was in Honolulu, we did a gig at the banana room. And the general manager was there, and Ikaika was laying the wires down all neatly. He turned to me and said, "You've also been doing music a long time, yeah?" I said, "Oh, kind of long." He said, "I can tell. Chiluki-san, he's straightening out the wires." And like,
it
be
a little bit
of
OCD too.
I mean,
that's all.
But you wouldn't think people would notice that. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, well, I can tell you who's been playing music a long time, because look, your son is straightening the wires out, and I was like,
It's not
okay. But and you never know who's out there. Yeah.
You never know who'll be out there.
Those small little things, it reflects reflects on you too.
When I watch a group on stage, I don't look, but if it catches my eye, then chances are it's probably messy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right.
It's not something I look for.
Yeah.
But I would think if it caught my eye, I'd be like, oh, I could fix those cords.
Or if they come with their wagon, they come with the wagon, and they just put the wagon right on the side of them, kind of stuff. And when you're looking at the stage, all you see is a wagon with all the covers and the guitars inside
guitar
a wagon
case, like
and the guitars.
You,
yeah,
the stage, like, oh,
that is.
You probably want to hide that.
Yeah.
And this is so many new things, but I just think it's really big coming from. Maybe you never know. Another musician might be in the crowd.
Yeah,
it just doesn't look good. That's all.
Yeah. Yeah, that's nice. Yeah.
You're doing well.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
But other than that, I feel that, you know, you're in the right direction.
Wow.
And you know, and the key to that is humility. And that you get, boy.
Wow.
Yeah. That you get, because through that, everything falls in place. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you get those that trying to trying to force their way into for it to happen, and you cannot force.
Mm-hmm.
It has
mm-hmm.
to come naturally, yeah.
Yeah.
And they say, they always say, good things come to people that are patient.
Right.
Yeah. That's what they say. That's what the Bible says. And you just be patient, and
yeah.
you know, and it's gonna fall in not your time, but in the time it should be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's gonna fall in.
Yeah.
And so the patient comes, and that's what the humility is, the patience. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And some like it to be overnight, yeah. Some to be overnight,
most,
yeah. Most, yeah.
Would like for it to be overnight.
But you're in the right direction, boy.
Wow.
You're going in the right direction. And I wish you all the best.
Thank you so much.
And it doesn't matter what other people, you know, it's just a lot of people see things what you know you have or I have or Kaika have, you know, and so you know they envy that, you know, but it never came overnight.
Mm-hmm.
It came. I don't know how many years Kaika been playing now. I lost track, but it's all the years that you've gone through that makes everything what it is today.
Yeah.
And if you go in line, yeah, step by step, instead of go from the bottom, you go straight up to the top.
Mm.
After you reach the top, you can't go any place but down.
Mm.
Yeah. So you work your way up. Work your way up. And then when you reach the top, you look back down. All this achievement that you had, you know, all worthwhile, you didn't see them.
Mm.
But today, you know, some of the kids are like, from here, they're like straight up to the top. And then they're going to miss the glory is here in the middle.
Mm-hmm, mm.
That's the glory part, is in the middle. All your accomplishments, yeah, kind of stuff. And,
wow.
But I watch you growing from the bottom.
Yeah.
You work your way up, yeah.
Yeah.
And you can honestly say everything you do is...
Was Uncle Sheldon a judge at the ukulele contest that you was at the Hula Grove?
I think...
What year did you do that?
I think it was 2013, 2014, 2015.
Oh, okay.
Oh,
you might have been one judge.
I think it was earlier. Well, maybe like... Because more closer to the 2000... Because they had it a long time. Then Uncle George used to call Uncle Sheldon and I because.
Do you remember Uncle Sheldon?
I don't.
The ukulele. He played slack ukulele.
Oh.
Dad's brother.
Oh.
So he was a judge at the ukulele contest for a bunch of years.
Back in the days, yeah.
Mm.
When Kiyoki had to go back and.
Then he became. He was part of the house band for the.
Uncle Richard.
Falsetto contest.
Yeah.
Now I think there's an award for him at the falsetto. So at the falsetto contest, now I guess you win the falsetto contest, and then there's another award for the Sheldon Brown instrumentalist.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Just depending on how well you play the instrument that you play.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
So the winner of the falsetto contest isn't necessarily the winner of the instrumental contest.
Right.
Or the instrumental side of the contest, yeah. But that one was named after Uncle Sheldon. Uncle Sheldon.
Wow.
Slack ukulele.
Wow.
That's all he played.
Oh, cool.
Like if you gave him to him standard, he would not have played.
He would not have.
Pretty much at all, yeah.
With the A-Don, like GCE, or GCEG?
Yeah, Slack. That's how he played him for
all his
50
life.
Years almost.
Oh, wow, nice.
Yeah. So the band that they were in, Dad was on slack 12, the Sheldon was slack ukulele, and then Arthur was on bass.
Wow.
And that was their band. So there was all, everything was slacky.
Wow.
And I remember when we first got into the music, we went to ask my father for his blessing, yeah. And then we told my dad, hey, that we get our first gig tonight. We're getting into the music. So we came for a blessing. Mm-hmm. My father went like, but why? This is first response. But why? They're like, wow. Well, because we like music. Well, he said, you know, music is a hard life, he said. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my mom and dad, They divorced when we were young. So my dad said, you know, music took me out of the house a lot. So, you know, it's not an easy life. But, hey, he said, folks are old enough. You know, you have your own family. So I'm going to give you just four advice. Oh, yeah. What is it? Show up on time. Don't be late. Fulfill your commitment. Mm. And go straight home. And we're like, we're waiting for a big one. And we're waiting. Like, okay, where's the big one? So we're like, okay, those are the four. What? You're thinking. And my dad turned around and he's walking back in the house. And we're like, come here, Uncle Sean, look, you got that? He go, yeah? So we're like, but not until years went by. We're like, we showed up on time. Never be late. Worked at this hotel for 17 years. And then fulfilled the commitment, no matter what it was. We did, even though the guy had to hold the microphone, fulfilled the commitment.
Right.
My brother Sheldon, he had pancreatic cancer. He was in the hospital. He checked himself out to go to Ritz-Carlton to go on stage because he was the house band. And the family, they came to the hospital. He wasn't there. They told the nurse, where's my husband? Oh, he checked himself out. So they called me up. Hey, Uncle, this is Sheldon, yeah? You know where my dad's there? Hospital, right? No, he checked himself out. What? Checked himself out. Oh, what? I don't know. And they found him at the Richard Hoffi Fossil Contest on stage. And so, you know, when he was there, I told my sister-in-law, I said, you know, my father said four things. Show up on time. Don't be late. Fulfill your commitment.
Mm-hmm.
And go straight home.
Mm-hmm.
And when we talk about around musicians, hey, how you guys study? You know, what kind of... So I would tell them the four.
Yeah.
And they all look at me and said, hey, you was Kevin, you was waiting for the big one, yeah? I said, I was waiting for the big one. He said, what you never know was your father gave you the Bible. What? The last one. Go straight home. Because a lot of us musicians never went home.
Mm-hmm.
And so our marriage never, you know, failed. And
trouble
I was like,
after the gig, apparently.
Yeah.
That's what it was. And my father never said that. He just said four things. So I'm going to tell you. And you figure them out yourself along the way. It's like, oh, that's what that meant. Okay.
Wow.
So the guys tell me, that's the best advice your dad gave you. He gave you the Bible. I said, oh. So, yeah. I mean,
yeah.
And I told Bob and them that too, you know, Nabaiha.
They would
tell me, Uncle, what advice you can give me? I was in Honolulu. I said, I'm going to give you the same advice my dad gave me. I told him the four things, and they all looked at me like, what? I know what he was thinking. What a big one.
Yeah.
What a big one, yeah.
Oh, that's, oh.
So,
yeah.
But, you know, now Baba, he has a family, yeah, you know.
Mm.
He would tell, hey, Uncle, you know, I remember your advice you gave me. I said, oh, good boy. Yeah. And somebody going to ask you one day, and you give them that for advice too.
Mm-hmm.
And then it goes down from there. So when Kaika wanted to be a musician, sure, you for advice.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah.
Because
you're still single yet, yeah? I mean, not married yet.
Yeah.
Well, there's somebody out there for you one day. Yeah, just keep playing your music.
Yeah.
It's like keeping you happy. And
yeah.
How old are you now, boy?
22.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you was maybe like 28 already.
Oh.
22.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, shucks.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It's so good, bro.
Wow. Bro.
It's so good.
Wow. 22. I was 21.
Oh.
Oh, my gosh.
Cool.
And look how far ahead you are, man. Oh my gosh. Oh, keep it up, boy. Keep it up, boy. Yeah.
Sure.
You get everything going for you. I always say there's a package deal. Yeah. And I would just tell them, hey, you have the package deal. they all look at me. You get a package deal. You get the looks. You get the knowledge of music. You get the humility. Yeah, and now you're doing the Olelo. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, you got the whole package deal for you.
Good.
Yeah,
yeah.
Thank you.
And you're on your way. And I mean, you know, this kind of good talk story kind of stuff, you know.
Yeah.
We feedback on each other.
We
and
gotta have one jam sesh, bro.
Guaranteed.
Yes.
We'll have to. Yeah, anytime.
So dad was just saying, man, I wish we had the guitars.
Yeah, he took him out of the car.
Oh, okay. We took him out last night.
Yeah, I took
him
out last night.
Yeah. That would have been nice, man, to have a little session right now.
Oh. And that's like an impromptu, that's the best ones.
That's the best ones,
yeah.
Bro.
When
yeah.
you're not, when you're not,
yeah.
you know, the plan, yeah, it, plan the thing, yeah, oh, man.
Yeah, get my guitar in the car. Hey, me too. Oh,
that's
it.
Yeah.
We'll be there all day.
I can't imagine what it would be if we had our guitars in the car. But it was meant to be that we just
yeah,
sit here and talk
yeah.
and, you know.
Just
yeah.
talk story.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
that, nothing is lost. It's just the opportunity to play music, maybe, but man, this is nice, man.
Yeah, but... any other time that we can come together, I'd love to jam.
Yeah.
yeah.
Good for you, man.
So this is a good, this is a program then? This is a, yeah?